You ready to give it a quick five minutes?
Ladies and gentlemen, there are only a few people that I really, really, really look up to the point where I want to listen to their voice every single day. Russ Belville puts on a two-hour radio show 5 days a week, and you better believe I'm listening. You know why? Because he's tuned in to the news in a way that I've never seen a marijuana activist before. And I get my news from him so I can lead this chapter and the state of Texas the most meaningful and best way possible. Please give it up for my friend, Russ Belville.
Thank you, thank you. Wow. Thank you so much,
and give it up again for Sean McAllister, the best chapter leader on the planet. This is my third time in the Dallas-Fort Worth area to do this march. I'm always so heartened to see so many people come out because I live in Portland, Oregon most of the time, and I don't know if you check the news, but we legalized weed there. Yeah, it's legal there. Like, if I don't like the weed for sale at the shop on 24th Street, I walk four blocks down to the one on 28th Street, or the one on 32nd, or the one on 42nd, or the one on 62nd, or the one on 79th, or the one on 109th. You get the picture? There are over 200 working retail outlets for marijuana shoppers in the city of Portland, Oregon. And yet, something very strange happened. The sky did not fall. People still went to work. Kids still went to school. People went shopping and played soccer, and everything is still the same as it was before, except when I want weed, I don't gotta call a guy, wait a half hour, go to the parking lot, wait another half hour to see if he shows up, pick him up, take him back to his place, listen to his band, shitty mixtape, pretend he's my friend. That's really the only difference. Oh, there's another difference though. In the state of Oregon, in our first month of legal marijuana sales, we sold $14 million worth of marijuana. And that's not false inflation, $14 million on $300 ounces. That's $150 to $200 ounces that we are talking about. Because here's an unalienable truth about marijuana legalization. Legalization crashes prices. The price of weed crashes. There was just a story in the Washington Post. Washington State started off at $25 a gram. They're now averaging $9.62 a gram. And that's with the world's highest marijuana tax included. 37% excise tax plus 6-9% state and local tax. We're still talking $9.62 a gram. Wholesale, $2.99 a gram wholesale. So, and yet, even with that price coming down, we've created thousands of jobs, and not just the jobs in the pot shops or growing the marijuana or trading or processing it, but guys who make dab pick tools, guys who make vacuum purge ovens, guys who make all sorts of things that they never thought would have anything to do with marijuana. I do these trade shows all over the country, and I end up talking to these guys that, you know, really kind of look out of place, you know? They look a little like me. A little short hair, a little laid back and square. And I start talking to him, and interview him for my show. I say, well, what do you sell? Well, vacuum purge ovens. Well, what does that do? Well, it was originally made for hospital, medical grade, like a hip replacement or a knee replacement. They got to put these parts in there and vacuum purge and make sure there's absolutely no chance of infection whatsoever. Vacuum is a medical device kind of thing. Like, oh, so what happened here? Well, it also turns out you need vacuum purge ovens to take butane off the hash oil after you've made it. So this guy's business has quintupled since the legalization of marijuana. So when people are out there, some of them, you know, they may be driving by or they're not part of our group, you know, people that aren't as educated, they may think that legalizing pot has nothing to do with them. Au contraire, it has everything to do with you. And that's the important thing. We all know. You know, don't you? You know. We all know. This is a plan. It's no big deal. It should be legal, right? Yeah. Problem is, only 14% of the U.S. public smokes pot on a regular basis. So we got another 86 to 88% of people to convince. And we can try and convince them with medical. There's all sorts of great arguments for that. And there's arguments for hemp. But I also want to give you a glimpse of the future to show you how important it is to legalize for a right that I call Nunya. Ain't none of your damn business why I'm smoking pot. Whether I'm sick, healthy, religious, atheist, what, it doesn't matter. It's my right. The Constitution has something in it called the Ninth Amendment. It says, the enumeration in this Constitution of certain rights is not meant to deny or disparage others that are retained by the people. I'll translate that from 18th century. We couldn't write all your rights down. You've got a whole bunch of rights. We're not going to write,
you have the right to breathe air. You have the right to kiss your wife. You have the right to eat a steak.
We're not going
to
write them all down. And if these guys were growing hemp and writing it on hemp paper, I think they would have thought we'd have the right to grow hemp. Don't you?
Yes!
So we've got this right, and we need to start exercising that and portraying that as a right, because there's certain dangers inherent in the medical marijuana argument. And I've seen this because I've been in Oregon, where they've had medical since 1998. And what we've seen is the evolution of medical marijuana is the first states, California, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, Montana, they had what we call whole plant medical marijuana. You're a patient, grow a plant, heal yourself.
Yeah.
That's the miracle of medical marijuana. It's not that, that marijuana is such the great healing herb. It is. But that's not the main point. The main point is it takes the doctors and the pharmaceutical companies and the insurance industry out of our healing. So when medical marijuana came along, it was whole plant. You could grow your own medicine and treat yourself. Hoorah! But they, of course, did not like that, those who opposed marijuana. And the next round, starting in 2010 in Arizona, the next round of medical marijuana laws were no home grow. In Arizona, they set up a rule called the 25-mile halo. It says if you live within 25 miles of a dispensary, you can't home grow. Well, hello, Arizona is what? A few cities and a bunch of desert. So wherever someone's living, there's bound to be a dispensary, and you're bound to be within 25 miles of it. And it so happens that in the state of Arizona now, 97.2% of the patients live within 25 miles of a dispensary. Now that sucks for patients, but it's great for a dispensary owner. Great for dispensary, right?
You should get a shot.
So that's been the laws that passed in Arizona and a few other eastern states where all of these can't grow it yourself, but you can shop at a dispensary. Well, hell, we wanted medical marijuana to get out of the pharmacy and out of the doctor and out of the middlemen. They're trying to bring the middlemen back in. And the latest round of these, starting in 2014 with Minnesota and New York, now most recently Pennsylvania, I can't even call them medical marijuana states because you cannot have plant. You can only have non-smokable varieties of cannabis. So now we're taking the whole plant out of it and making it yet another thing in a pill bottle or another thing in a syrup bottle or another thing in an inhaler that they can barcode, patent, and overcharge us for. Do we want that?
No!
So it's good to argue for medical, yeah, because it opens people's minds, but you got to realize that is a stepping stone that leads to the argument of, look, if we're not going to lock up the sick people, why would we lock up the healthy people? And here's the thing about medical marijuana laws. When you draw this line, when you make a medical marijuana law, you're drawing a line that says, above this line, if you're over this sick or over this disabled, we won't put you in a cage. But if you're under this line, sorry, Charlie, you're going to jail. And the problem is, somebody who deserves medical is always going to fall under that line. So we have the mama here, right? Mothers advocating medical marijuana for autism?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Pennsylvania, the 24th medical marijuana state, is the first to recognize autism as a condition for medical marijuana treatment. You can't get medical marijuana in Oregon for your kid for autism. It's not on our list yet. Well, the hell with these lists. Let's go with what works. I'm tired of these people telling us we need to have the FDA tell us that the drug is medicine before it's actually medicine. Do you stop and think about it? Every drug ever recalled was once approved by the FDA. Thalidomide and Vioxx and drugs that killed people. And we've got 7,000 years of documentable evidence that marijuana has not killed anyone by overdose.
Yeah.
This goes back to the Chinese emperors, for God's sake. And you know what they'll say? They'll say, well, that's not science. That's just anecdotal evidence. That's just anecdotes. Barbara here, she's just an anecdote. You're just an anecdote, Barbara. My friend LK, he was a veteran. PTSD, he's passed down. Just an anecdote. Little Alexis Martel, 400 days seizure-free. Just an anecdote. I'll tell you what, I'll take even one surviving anecdote over all of your delay in science any day. We don't need the FDA to tell us what we can see with our own damn two eyes. We can see a child stop seizing. When we can see a cancer on someone's skin fading away. When we can see someone who has suffered through the horrors of war or rape trauma or any number of things that can cause post-traumatic stress to finally be able to relax. Part of our problem in fighting for this, though, is that the other side, they'll allow medical marijuana because there's a little moral game that's going on here. Well, you know, potheads are bad, but someone suffered from cancer. That's worse. So we'll let them smoke. But in accepting that argument, there's an inherent, but if you're not sick enough, you're a criminal. You ever heard that saying that sometimes in the medical marijuana states, they'll say, we're patients, not criminals. None of us are criminals. Now, we may be outlaws. We're outlaws at the moment, but we ain't criminals. We are good, law-abiding people.
Yes, we are!
And when you really get down to the nuts and bolts of this, this drug war, and particularly this marijuana war, is a tool of control based in inherent systemic racism and classism in this society. Just recently, there was an unearthed quote that was in Harper's Magazine, front page story, and it dates back to the Nixon era. Richard Nixon. Tricky Dick Nixon. And it was Ehrlichman, which is his public policy advisor, speaking to this reporter, who had asked him about the war on drugs. Because a little history lesson, back in 1970, Nixon wanted the scientific backing to keep cracking down on pot. So he hired this governor named Raymond Schaefer. They put together a commission. He's got this Republican governor working on it. By God, we'll get a damn hard lesson on pot for these kids. The governor came back and said, you know, really, we ought to decriminalize it. In 1970, they came up with this. The federal government came back with a report and said, we studied the whole thing and it ought to be decriminalized. And Nixon went, well, screw that, threw it in the wastebasket. So, when they were at this, reporter's asking about that. He's asking about how Nixon and how they came up with the drug war despite the commission saying it should be decrim. And Ehrlichman said, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember the quote exactly, is that they knew that this war on drugs was bunk, but they also knew that if they could demonize marijuana and heroin, they could infiltrate the black power and hippie power movements, the left-wing movements, anti-Vietnam War movements, that were brewing in that day. We knew if we associated the blacks with heroin and the hippies with marijuana, we could infiltrate their leadership, break up their meetings, and end their power. So that's exactly what this is based on, and that's what it's still based on. Marijuana is what I like to call the police's magic key to your Fourth Amendment. If they say the magic three words, I smell weed, suddenly your rights go out the window. They start rifling through your car and packing down and searching and booking it. It's all a tool of keeping us controlled. The police know that marijuana doesn't really make people violent or belligerent or criminal, but they also know I smell weed is a handy way to start messing with someone they think is up to something. Like, I know that long hair is up to no good. I know that tattooed fella's up to no good. I know that guy's up to no good. But I can't really prove it. What's that? I smell weed. Or worse, they bring out the canine dog, as if it's a scientific tool. Understand that over 50,000 years of human dog evolution has led the dog brain to want to please its master. If that cop wants that dog to alert, it will alert. Whether the cop thinks he's trying to make it alert or not, There's a really cool study they did on this. They took these canine cop teams, a whole bunch of them, and they sent them to four different rooms. They filmed what happened in the four different rooms. Now, here's the setup of the rooms. The room can either have a red piece of paper or not. The door on the door. Red piece of paper on the door or not. And the red piece of paper says, there's drugs in here. And the room can either have drugs in it or not. Right? So if you do the math, that makes four rooms. A red room with drugs, a red room without drugs, a blank room with drugs, a blank room without drugs. Now, if the dog's a scientific instrument, it could give a shit what color paper is on the door. Because its nose is going to detect the drugs, it's going to detect it in the rooms that have drugs and not in the room that doesn't. But the cop, that red piece of paper means everything. That's where I think I can get a bust or an arrest. And so they ran the test, and guess where the dogs tended to alert more? On the red piece of paper, not the drugs. The rooms where there was drugs and no red piece of paper, the dogs didn't alert as much as rooms that had a red piece of paper and no drugs. So that proved that it's the handler, it's the human being that's running that dog that causes the problem. So we are up against this tool of control, and marijuana is so entwined into so much of this control. They say that there's not a lot of people in jail or prison for marijuana. They'll say, well, there's only 0.1% of people in jail for marijuana. Well, yeah, how many people are in jail? 2.3 million, 0.1%. What is that, 2,300? That's some people in jail for marijuana, ain't it? And they don't count a lot of people who are in jail technically for, well, they're actually in jail for marijuana, but technically not. Like, if you got busted in a fist fight for assault, you're a young man, you got drunk, you hit someone, you got an assault on your record. You cleaned up your act, but then you're on probation, and then they bust you for peeing hot on probation. When they put you back in jail, it's not for failing because you smoke weed, it's for the original charge, the assault. You're back in jail. So that doesn't come up in their statistics. A lot of this stuff doesn't come up in their statistics. So first and foremost, thank you. Give yourselves a big hand for being here on the courthouse steps. A site I will always remember, people fighting for freedom in Texas. This is about your freedom, your constitution, your heritage. Hemp has been on this continent since 1611, medical marijuana since 1850, recreational marijuana since the days of Louis Armstrong, the 1900s. Keep on fighting for it, it's all right. I'm Radical Russ, thank you.